Welcome to the Shea Charlotte podcast, a vintage brand which used to be a shop and is now a show. This is where vintage meets storytelling. I'm your host, Charlotte Dallison, and each week I chat to a guest who has an enviable vintage wardrobe about their vintage clothing journey. The purpose of this podcast is to encourage more people to wear more vintage. Whether you're a vintage dabbler or devotee, there is so much to learn from these conversations. Now let's chat clothes, shall we? This week's guest is Joanne Gambale. She is the founder of Slogue, a wardrobe styling service that promotes female empowerment through secondhand shopping and expressive personal style. She previously worked as a writer and copy editor at Vogue Australia from 2007, but now only writes about slow fashion between coaching her clients, styling fashion shoots, and running her Slogue styling workshops. It was a privilege to speak to Joanne today, and she was a bit of a last minute guest because she, out of the blue, added me on LinkedIn, and I thought she seems like the type of person I'd love to have on this podcast. So I'm really glad that she's come into my sort of sphere, and I'm really pleased to share her and her work with you guys. She's also had a really interesting life, and she's a very entertaining person. So I really hope you enjoy this interview this week. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, Charlotte?
Good. I'm so happy to be speaking to you. I mean, sustainable styling is like, it's exactly what this audience wants to hear about. So I'm really excited to hear more. But before we get into what you're doing now, I'd love to hear a little bit about you and your background, where you're from, what you do, all of that good stuff.
Oh, sure, sure. I guess you want to know why I love vintage then. I mean, where that all began.
Yes, absolutely. The backdrop to that.
As you can tell by my accent, I'm English. I grew up in a city called Sheffield in the north of England, and we didn't have a whole lot of money. So I guess it all began out of necessity, the whole op shopping or charity shops, as we call them there. I was quite into clothes from a very young age, so I kind of needed to find clothes somewhere. I was constantly nagging my mom. I wanted to look like my best friend, who was from a much richer family and always had the latest trends. In the 90s, she would wear this full acid wash denim jacket and jeans. This was my bestie, Jessie. And I really wanted the same outfit. But funnily enough, that wasn't something you could get vintage, because now we consider acid wash as vintage because we think of the 80s and the 90s. But then that was when it all began. You know, we're talking late 80s.
Yeah.
So it wasn't easy to get vintage acid wash. You basically... So we went, you know, rummaging through all the charity shops, as always. If my mum hadn't made me something, which she used to make me all my clothes, but obviously you get to an age where that's not cool anymore. And yeah, I remember we found this 70s denim jacket that somebody had accidentally spilt a whole, maybe a can of bleach on it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it was not kind of cool to me. Like it was really embarrassing, but it was all we could find, and I just did it anyway because it represented, I guess, what I loved about my friend's jacket. And it's funny because it's kind of been like that ever since. It's like I see a trend, or I see like a style icon or somebody, and I want to do that look. But for many, many years, I just didn't have the money, so I had to kind of be creative about it. And I guess that's how it all started.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting you say that, because often that's like the origin of how people get into vintage, and sometimes they'll kind of work their way out of a situation and kind of make more money and be able to afford things, but they still want to shop vintage or secondhand because it's kind of more fun. It like pushes you and it's more individual,
and it's better quality. I mean, you know, maybe this denim jacket wasn't a good example of something that was better quality. It literally had, someone had had a big bleach accident with this jacket, and I can't believe how I would have worn it every day for a good year, which is a lot as a kid, you know, because you grow through phases. I think I was 11. But generally speaking, when you buy something vintage, there's a reason it's still going strong. You know, it's going to keep going strong for a lot longer. even something 100 years old, I mean, you know, you might need to repair a few kind of little, you know, beads falling off and that kind of thing. But it's incredible how well it's lasted.
Yeah. And I'd love to know, when did you move to Australia and were you still sort of shopping secondhand and vintage then?
Yeah, so I came here as a backpacker in 2000. I didn't intend to stay at all, but I met my now husband at Mardi Gras in 2001, so a few months after I arrived. By that point, I'd been in London for a while trying to make it as an actress. I kind of gave up really soon after beginning because I did drama and English at uni. I was kind of killing time before, okay, I had to start going to auditions in London. And I went to kind of musical theatre auditions. I was really out of my depth. I hadn't been to drama school. So I started signing up for drama schools. And then that's when I kind of had a bit of a breakdown because I realised that actually wasn't what I wanted to do anymore, even though that is all I wanted to do from the age of six.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was a massive kind of turning point for me. I realized, I said to my mom, I don't like being judged. So that's kind of going to get in the way of a career like this. So I was a show off and I still am. And I guess I've used that in other ways. But that was why I went traveling, to kind of find myself. And so by that point, I pretty much had never had enough money to really spend on my wardrobe. So that was when fast fashion was just really beginning. Topshop, Miss Selfridge. I remember there's this really cheap shop called Mark One. This is before Primark. And I used to shop at all those places. I tried to be the stylish person I felt like I was inside, but, you know, it was hard. And then, you know, I spent all my student loan on clothes.
That's what they're for.
Yeah. By the time I got to uni, you know, I was in a terrible style situation, that's for sure. And it wasn't helped by the fact that I was then living out of a backpack. Luckily, I came with my dear friend, Mary, who has always had a lot of style, and I used to just borrow her clothes. I remember she didn't have much money and she kind of got a loan and she spent it instead of spending it on food for us, which we literally were starving. She spent it on two pairs of red vintage stilettos. So that was Mary. She's an early style icon for me. Anyway, so yeah, by the time I settled, it was, yeah, I kind of had a pretty major kind of style Bermuda Triangle or something, you know, black hole.
Gosh.
And so when I finally started to kind of waitress, and then I did a diploma in journalism, and then I got a job in journalism before I'd even finished that. And, you know, I worked really hard trying to find my feet in Australia. And that's when it all kind of came back, and my love of vintage, because I did go vintage shopping a lot with my mum. There was a gorgeous vintage shop in Sheffield, which I still remember. Apparently it's still there and I'd love to go back. And, you know, I loved old movies. Most of my style icons growing up were from old movies. So, yeah, I felt like I kind of had this really big period of my life where I wasn't doing what I loved. And so to finally get back into it, once I finally settled and I knew what I was doing with my career for the moment, you know, journalism, and which was always my second preference after acting anyway. So, yeah, I started going to Glebe markets, Kirribilli markets, and really getting to know the slow vintage scene. And so, slow. It's on my brain. That's my brand name. That was a very weird Freudian plug.
Yeah, Freudian plug. That's brilliant. I love that.
I meant to say Sydney. So Sydney vintage scene, you know. And honestly, that is when I found my Sydney, you know.
Right, yeah.
Because my husband isn't into that kind of thing. He's a sporty guy. When, you know, all my friends were kind of through him. So that when I started finding, yeah, the vintage scene, you do, you find your people, don't you? And you find your tribe. It's such a way of life, isn't it? It's not just about clothes.
Totally. It's funny you say that too, because actually in the reverse, I found my tribe in London when I kind of got into the vintage scene. And I was much more sort of vintage then, as in like top to toe styled. Today I'm quite top to toe style because I've set my hair properly, but I don't sort of do this every day anymore. But it's interesting how clothes connect people, especially like something more niche and kind of more, it's got a bit more soul or something like that, and therefore the person comes through. And it's interesting too, you say that you have an acting diploma and that was your origin, because I actually know quite a few journalists or people who are sort of on social media now, or even people in the fashion industry who started acting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, it's a story I've heard before, and I think it's interesting you obviously want to express yourself, and now you've found like a different avenue. But I'd love to know more about your personal style today and how you incorporate vintage into it.
Yeah, well, I've always been as fascinated by the current scene as I have been about the history of fashion. And for me, I am fascinated. And what you just touched upon there with the whole having a tribe or finding a niche of other people who have similar vibe to you. And that is what I most love about fashion. What I hate most about fashion is obviously related to the whole fast fashion problem, which is the conglomerates and the money and the capitalism of it all and the consumerism of it all and the mass production of it all. But what I love about fashion is actually the origin of it all. So why fashion, you know, I'm reading a book, two books in tandem about fashion history at the moment, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the history and why clothes are so important and how they bring about kind of how they represent subcultures and how they represent social history moments and, you know, zeitgeist. If you think about pretty much every moment of social history throughout even prehistory, it's something, you know, if you think of Tutankhamun and the kind of mummy, the wrapping in fabric, there is always something to do with fabric, the fabric of society. So I am fascinated by that, and I'm fascinated by how the constant change of fashion, that actually the shape of it is always circular. So the fact that no matter what the latest trend is, even if we're talking extreme avant-garde that feels completely new, there is always an element of that look that is reminiscent of something that's been before. And that's what fascinates me. And also to have kind of developed a real deep understanding of what we can do with our own style and how we can basically do that most easily by buying secondhand and vintage and almost being really ruthless about it and just kind of pretty much never entering a new shop, because that it limits you, or it's the opposite. It kind of allows you the freedom to do whatever you want. And so if you look at the latest catwalk shows, I've got no problem with that, because I actually, like I say, I always see elements of what's been before in those, and I find it, I'm not at all negative about that. That is not a problem for me. That is the nature of fashion, and it always has been. You look at how in the, you know, age of Jane Austen, the Regency era, how classicalism was back, and they had these empire lines and the kind of little tendril hair,
yes,
that was like the Greek statues and the Roman statues. It's not a new thing, and I love that my dad was her second husband in the late 70s. And she made her own dress, and it was Edwardian style.
Wow.
Because that was the thing then. I mean, and now we're doing 70s again, the whole cottagecore look.
Yes.
So we're rehashing what was already a rehash of a previous Edwardian and Victorian kind of fashion, which was probably a rehash of Renaissance or something before that. You know, Renaissance in itself was a rehash. And so I find it fascinating. Just keep seeing things redone and in a new way, and how does fashion stay fresh? So that side of it I love, and that is what influences, I guess, my own personal style. I have every era in my wardrobe. I find it really hard to pin one favorite era down, but if I'm pushed, it would be 30s. But that's not necessarily on me either, because there's a lot of kind of satin silk bias cut that I don't feel super comfortable in, but I love the look of it on someone else. You know, I love 20s set, but the same thing. I don't love it on myself, but I also love 70s. And, you know, I love the kind of Annie Hall look. I love the Ali McGrath look in Love Story. You know, I just have so many influences across so many eras. And so my style is really, it's like with a nod to the current fashions. I like updating all the time with old clothes, ironically.
Yeah.
But always kind of referring to a variety of other cultural references and yeah. I mean, it's kind of like you say, it's expressing yourself, but it's like expressing an interest. It's kind of like a cook, you know, like a cook at home who is fascinated by cuisine and loves to kind of create their own cuisine, but also likes to read about, you know, purist kind of Japanese cuisine. And it's just being a total fashion nerd, I guess.
Yeah.
And how you express that.
It sounds like you have such an appetite for fashion.
Yeah.
Speaking about food, you know, it's just sort of, yeah, I can hear that and everything you're saying. And it's interesting too that you say you love the 1930s. I love the 1930s as well. However, I am short and curvy and don't really suit those dresses. I do have one piece which is sensational, and it's like this duck egg, pale, almost seafoamy, greeny blue, and it's so beautiful. It's sort of like a slip that you might have seen Jean Harlow in.
Yes.
And it's monogrammed with DJ. So I'm like, who was DJ? I have to know. So I sort of embody this character whoever I tried on. There's like a rope belt, which sort of has a Grecian nod, speaking of what you were just saying. And it's just so bloody beautiful. And it's just like, oh my God. But yeah, the literal sort of everyday 30s look, I wouldn't be able to pull off, quite frankly. But there's nothing wrong with it. I think you can still be inspired and sort of have it at the back of your mind. And so back to your personal style, have you had any sort of like specific fashion phases? You've obviously had these chapters of where you've lived, and how would you sort of describe the phases?
Yeah, I don't know if this is a phase so much as, because the funny thing is my phases are daily, you know what I mean? They can really change from day to day. But so what I would answer that question in the kind of, I would flip it and say that I've got a constant throughout all those different phases that I've noticed in the last few years that I hadn't really thought about before. But, and it's kind of a little bit of a, it's a wink to a bit of mod. It's a bit mod meets kind of college, you know, like Ivy League, slightly not too preppy. I do a lot of turtlenecks and I own a lot of kilts. I like wearing kilts with thick stockings and little ankle boots. I've done that for years, and little woolly hats and berets. And yeah, so I feel like that has been a constant for me. And then I'll kind of add other elements. Like at the moment, I'm a lot more kind of oversized because I'm loving that kind of menswear vibe. But I do my own thing with it. I might put that with my go-to, which is, you know, maybe a little kilt or a little button-up down to the neck, you know? And I feel like those are my constants, and they help kind of keep things grounded. Yeah, because if you're kind of doing a Madonna or old school Madonna, where you're just going from one thing to another like a chameleon, it's fine, but it's harder to kind of, you can lose your way a bit and your sense of self, I think. So I'm glad I have kind of unintentionally found a constant through all of that.
Yes, I think it's interesting. I think that's indicative of innate style as well. I think often these public figures who have these really extreme changes, and that's not to criticize it either because it's fabulous and it inspires us, but it is sort of more like, okay, they clearly have like a team working on this and they've got a specific kind of mood board, like it's a collection. Whereas I think, you know, you are a stylist, and if you have innate style, you often do have something to ground what you wear. And I'm sort of the same with the 50s look, late 50s, early 60s. But then equally, I feel like my hair is more kind of 40s. And then,
yeah, I was going to say that.
Do you know what I mean? And I sort of just know, I sort of know my anchors.
Yeah, definitely. And you know that slightly longer hair suits you.
Yes. Well, I'm growing it at the moment. So thank you for saying that, because it's agony. And I'm tempted to go get a bob like every day because it's pissing me off. But yeah, the next question I have is, do you have a most memorable vintage clothing purchase?
Well, yeah, I do. Well, there are two things. One, it's about the thing. I'll make some sense in a minute. The other one is really about the experience of buying the thing. And the thing ended up just being a bit of a kind of, why do I even have this anymore? Because it was a bit of a weird one. So that first thing was it was basically a little girl's dress from the 50s.
Oh.
But it was really cute. But I found it in New York, and I happened to be that same day I was off to meet Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh my God.
Oh no, along with a lot of other like complete loser fans. it wasn't like an interview or anything. I was just,
yeah, I was like, wow, let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got to the front of the queue eventually, and she signed my bottle of perfume. It was when she brought out her very first perfume.
Oh, I love that.
Mid-2000s. I kind of knew she'd appreciate it. And she didn't actually compliment me, which was very disappointing, but I felt good. So I wore this little 50s dress as a top. And I was wearing skinny jeans, which is so of the time, you know. Again, it's what I do now, you know, it's bringing now with elements of the past to make it original. Yeah, no, I felt really good that day. And so I'll always remember that because I just remember wandering through, because I loved Sex and the City at the time. And I remember wandering through past all the brownstones of New York, like literally feeling like Carrie Bradshaw in my little vintage, my slightly weird vintage getup, you know. But then my other one is really special, and you'll understand why, is when I found my wedding dress. That was at I can never remember if it's Blacktown or Bankstown, because I've never been since, which is crazy. But there's basically a vintage market out west. And I went there. It would have been about 2008. I was looking specifically for my dress and for bridesmaid dresses, because I had three bridesmaids. I wanted to get them all different dresses that somehow worked together. I couldn't really find it. And I found this little store that had a few nice bits and bobs, but nothing really screamed at me. And then I saw a tiny little bit of off-white guipure lace sticking out of a big Chinese laundry bag, you know, those stripy bags, those really unglamorous, you know, laundry bags. And it was just sticking out. And I was like, oh, what's that? And the vendor said, I wasn't sure whether to get that one out. And she was a little bit like stumbling and kind of a little bit awkward about it. It turns out the reason why it was her mom's wedding dress.
Oh my God.
And I think she brought it along thinking, I'm not sure I want to sell this. But when she saw my face, basically I saw the lace and I was like, that is exactly what I was looking for. And you know that feeling when you're into clothes so much that you fantasize about something you haven't even necessarily seen, but you just have it in your head. You know, I mean, obviously fashion designers, this must be their constant reality. You know, that's how they come up with ideas. And so I had this thing and it's like, I kind of, that is all I really wanted, that kind of lace. Anyway, it was, yes, from the 1930s. The neckline was all ragged and kind of holy, needed a lot of repair. And the same with the sleeves. The bottom bit was amazing. It was kind of like party at the front, wedding at the back, because it stopped at the shin and was kind of figure hugging at the front. But then it had a big bustle down below, a million covered silk buttons. And then the bustle turned into this long, thick train.
Oh, I love it. How cool.
I know. But at the front, it kind of looked like a 50s pencil dress. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this beautiful lace. Anyway, it was a summer wedding. So it was like, well, you know, it had all this damage. So we just kind of made it a lower, even though I loved it as it was, but it would have been too hot. So I got it altered. We had it made lower in the neck and then created these like scalloped, a couple of layers of kind of cap sleeves that went along with the shape of the lace. And then I don't know if you've ever heard of Sandy Bizzers. She's a legendary vintage guru and seller, and she's had various shops over the years. And she was also a hat maker for a while, and she still would be. She made a headpiece out of the lace that we'd taken, that we'd removed from the dress to make it a summer dress. She starched it. So it was just like, and it was kind of on the side. And then she sewed little pearls throughout it. And then I had the little 1930s. And if you call it a victory roll, because that's more a 40s thing, what is the one that, you know, you know more about this kind of side of vintage, the curl that kind of goes like that?
Like a little pin curl.
Pin curl. Yeah. So I had a pin curl just underneath and oh my God, it was, I loved my dress. And so that moment, and I remember trying it on and it was really tight, but you know, brides always end up losing weight unintentionally because you get kind of nervous in the lead up to it. But I remember this guy walked past and he was like, oh my God, you got to get that. You got to get that. So yeah, that was an amazing moment.
Oh, and I reckon the vendor would have been thrilled to rehome it to someone who appreciated it.
I kept in touch with her and I sent her pictures and everything. She was thrilled. Yeah.
Oh, so I think I know the answer to this question, but does sustainability factor into why you buy secondhand?
Well, it does now, but I have to say, it didn't for many years because I didn't get it. Like a lot of people maybe still don't get it. I would go to Primark and buy a 60s style dress. I'm so sorry to admit. And that was early 2000s when we went back to London for a bit. And then, you know, and I had a bunch of vintage as well. What the turning point for me was, and this was also the reason I came up with Slow, by the time I was settled in Australia and I'd kind of gone from newspapers into magazines, and then I'd landed this job at Vogue. I was sub-editing at Vogue and I sat just opposite Claire Press. She wrote the book, amongst other things, Wardrobe Crisis, and it's been a massive hit, and she has created a podcast out of it. And she's super smart, you know, fellow English, fellow vintage loving journo. So we hit it off. She actually helped me source those bridesmaid dresses I mentioned. So she was really lovely during that period. And then we lost touch, as you do, when we both left Vogue for other things. And then we got back in touch because I read her book and I was reading it while we're on this big trip just before COVID. So when I got back from the trip, just before COVID hit was when Slow began. So it was kind of a bit of a bad time. But at the same time, we were lucky to get that trip in, and I would be reading it kind of in the, you know, beaches in Vietnam, and invariably there'd be kind of litter floating around the water. And this whole idea of sustainability really came home for me. And it was like, I just had this massive light bulb moment. I was like, yeah, I enjoy writing about fashion. And I was writing about interiors at the time as well for Vogue Living. That's great, but I don't feel like I've found my place in the world yet. I've always, between, like, you know, those times when I really just couldn't do fashion in the way I wanted to do, but I always had it in my head. I would always look at what other people were wearing. I would always feel inspired or have opinions about clothes from movies to the streets, whatever. And it's like, this has always been my outlet. This has always been my expression and my creative. So that was when I realized that actually styling and helping other people do what I do, suddenly I realized this is the way to shop for a more, you know, sustainable future, for a better future. So maybe I just help people do what I find so easy. Ever since that moment, I kind of came up with Vogue, which is obviously a very cheeky combination of Vogue and slow fashion. But that was when I started reading more and more about the fast fashion and all that comes with that. And the more you read about it, the more passionate you feel about it, actually. It used to be about shopping vintage because that was the coolest and the best stuff. And because my passion for clothes usually had a kind of historic element. But now I just basically stay out of the new shops out of principle. So yeah, it of course is about sustainability now.
That's so great. I think that will probably inspire people, because I think there's something still about sustainability that feels a little bit like, oh my God, I just don't even want to know, for many people. But it's nice to reframe it too and be like, well, you can be sustainable and wear lots of vintage and look cool and look amazing and look better than other people.
That is so true. In fact, that has reminded me of another concept I thought about a lot on this kind of 4-month trip. I mean, I was so lucky to have that trip, and that's the reason Slow came about, because I had all this time to kind of think about it. And like, I wrote a zillion notes when I was supposed to be lying on the beach. The whole concept of sustainable fashion, and it's still like this, the associations of sustainable, that it's like hemp, beige, capsule wardrobes. It's either hippie or it's like really minimal kind of, you must survive on 30 pieces for the rest of your life kind of concept. I couldn't do. And it's like, surely there are a bunch of people out there who are like me, that they care about the planet, but they also want to have fun with fashion. And they also, actually, I do want to change up my look a lot. And I promote my own version of a capsule, which is basically you only have a small kind of capsule of what you own and out in your kind of main dressing area, and that everything else is packed away. Because my belief is that the reason people think they've got nothing to wear when they've got a mass of clothes is because they can't see the forest for the trees. So my concept is to get rid of the overwhelm. And I call it rotational capsule. And so then you have a capsule for that winter. I literally was at a client's last night and we came up with her winter capsule. We've done our first winter, which was between COVID kind of lockdowns, and then we've done a summer, spring, summer, and now we've just done a second winter. So she's pulling things out again that she hasn't kind of worn since last winter. And we've also realized some of the things that she really hasn't missed. It's a way of editing your wardrobe without just like culling, culling, culling. You really practice kind of mindful, I guess. And I don't even want to call it culling, mindful editing. And you really take your time with that. And you start with the good stuff and you don't do any culling till the very, like, till a year later, when you're like, okay, you know what? I didn't like it last winter. I don't like it this winter.
I think that's such a brilliant concept. I remember when I moved from Sydney to Melbourne, there was a period where I only had like 2 suitcases worth of clothes for about 5 months. And I had to sort of wait when I kind of unpacked my clothes, I was like, oh my God, I've got so many clothes. It's so exciting. I felt like I was going shopping, but it was all stuff I already owned. And equally, because I was in a new environment, I felt really reinvigorated about all of the stuff I had. And I think this is actually a flaw in social media. It's this weird pressure to wear something new that people haven't seen, not new necessarily as in brand new, but just something that people haven't seen yet. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with loving something like your acid wash denim jacket when you're 11 and wearing it constantly and putting it away for a while and bringing it back up. We have to get away from that ridiculous idea. Like, we're not bloody pop stars that need to wear something new for the sake of PR every day.
I know. And it's exactly, and it's only become that way because fast fashion has made it possible, because brands like Shein and all these that, you know, sell what, a dress for $12. You know, when fast fashion became a thing, and I was one of them, I was like, wow, this is so cool. Because as I said, I always struggled with for money. And it's like, oh, I can finally go to Primark and get a new dress for Friday night, you know? And people called it was like the democracy. Fashion had become democratic because anyone could indulge in it and anyone could have fun with fashion and keep up with the trends, because all the fast fashion, the whole thing was that they kept up with latest trends really quickly. The side effect of that is that people think they always have to come up with something new and that they have to keep buying all these cheap things. And these cheap things are so cheaply made that they only look good when they're shiny new. And then after maybe one or two wears, they look terrible. And it's just toxic fibers somehow needing to, you know, go back into the earth, but they never will. They'll just be around forever, not being worn. You know, it's...
I mean, it's so, you can really like start the spiral when you think of it. And actually, to speak to what you were talking about before, Claire Press, her book is a brilliant resource if you do want to know more, Wardrobe Crisis, and her podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, do you purchase vintage for any other areas of your life?
I sure do. I have just literally, end of last week, I had someone install a 1950s wall unit, which is absolutely divine. I bought it off Facebook Marketplace and then realized when I kind of messaged them if, you know, whether it was available, that actually it's a friend of mine.
Oh.
So that was really nice. And she's a bit of a kind of Sydney vintage celeb called Sarah Doyle. She and her husband Elvis own a lot of restaurants here. They're the real rockabilly dream couple. But she just had moved on from this unit and still really, really loved it, but didn't have a place in her new home for it. So that was a perfect scenario. And I have had so much fun styling it over the weekend.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I have a combination. I'm probably mostly these days I have mid-century stuff because it just seems to suit my house. I mean, my house is like Federation era, but it's got like a modern renovation at the back, which we didn't do. It's not particularly like clever architecture or anything like that. It's quite boxy, but I feel like it suits that mid-century vibe. But then I've got all sorts of other things. I've got 1930s Japanese. I've got not posh antique. I don't really go for fancy antique stuff, you know. I'm just looking over there. There's a little really cute little kids school desk.
Oh, I love that.
That's still there, left over from when I did homeschooling. So I'd work in the studio and my kid would do her homeschooling next to me.
Oh, precious.
But then I also have modern stuff because just like with my fashion, I like to mix in modern. But what I try desperately hard to do is stick with secondhand. So I'd love to be able to afford designer modern furniture and rugs and all of that, but generally can't. So instead of buying kind of IKEA new, I just try and find it secondhand so that I feel like I'm sticking to my principles.
Totally. It's funny too, because you were talking about before when you were shopping for clothes when you were younger, you sort of had to buy secondhand. Now you still choose to. And then you kind of graduate to furniture as you grow up. And I think many of us, including myself, like have to sort of buy secondhand. But then I think as you make more money, you still want to buy secondhand because it's so much more interesting. And like you said, it was your friend who was the seller of that piece. Like, what a great story. It just sort of takes it back to community. And I think that's really endearing, actually. And so you've been shopping vintage for a long time. Have you noticed many obvious changes in the vintage market?
In vintage shops themselves, probably they are, yeah, definitely much more expensive than they used to be. I am friends with a lot of vintage sellers and I totally get it. And I think that kind of annoys me when people complain about the price of vintage, only because I know what work goes into dealing with vintage. I mean, I did it for a little while. It didn't last long because I've got about 7 racks of stuff, but I can't keep collecting it and selling it because it is a massive job, massive. So first you've got to source it. People often donate things, but actually things are donated to vintage sellers. If they are donated, it's because they would take so much time to actually make them sellable that they are actually, in a weird way, expensive to take on. So the time to put in to restore something, to clean it properly without ruining it, and, you know, taking that risk, then you need to photograph it. You need to, you know, merchandise it if you've got a shop, and post it, and then you may not sell it for years and years. So the change is, yes, that things are more expensive, but that's because the demand is higher. Vintage has been cooler. I mean, people writing at the moment about suddenly vintage is trendy, and it makes me laugh. It's like it's been hip to buy vintage forever.
Amongst the genuinely cool people.
Yeah. I mean, in the 80s, they were buying 20s and 30s and the coolest people. You know, you look at the Carrie Bradshaw's actual stylist, Patricia Field, the woman behind the Sex and the City costumes, and she has been collecting vintage for like decades and decades. And in the 90s, Kate Moss made it kind of popular. That's how she had a special style, is that she did do modern designer, but she always had an element of vintage, and it made it her own.
And it gave her like a London edge. I'd love to talk to you like all day. I honestly could, but I'm just going to wrap things up with a couple of quick fire questions. So who was your style icon when you were growing up?
Like, I loved old movies. There was Ally McGraw in Love Story, Diane Keaton in Annie Hall. Marilyn Monroe has always been a major thing for me. I obsessed, absolutely obsessed about her as a kid.
Same.
Yeah, I bet. My favorite thing about Marilyn's style was actually her off-duty style. I loved her kind of sweater girl look with the little capri pants or the dark indigo jeans and stuff, and like the high-waisted pants. I always loved high-waisted pants and hated the whole bloody low slung hipster era.
I know, which is coming back.
Coming back, I know. Well, I'm just ignoring it.
Yes, same.
Who else? And then, you know, Rizzo in Grease. There's so many. Oh, Katharine Hepburn in her men's pants when that was rebellious. And I was thinking the other day about Kelly McGillis. And if you remember her in Top Gun, the original Top Gun, her hair was a massive inspiration for me. And I got my hair permed at that point when I saw that. Anyway, that's another thing. But those big oversized bomber jackets. And I've always loved that look. I have bomber jackets now. Yeah, so that was as a kid. It kind of changed as I got older.
Well, who is your style icon now?
Yeah, well, I went through a phase of Chloe Savini. Loved her. I love people who've got an edge. People who are clearly, literally too cool for school. Like, as in, they do not follow rules. Yeah, so then there's Alexa Chung, who is a little bit more mainstream, but she's got an innate talent to just, like, style herself. And I hate the whole effortless style thing, because it's like, if you put no effort into your look, then you look effortless, like not stylish.
Yeah.
You know, but I get it. And if there was someone who looks effortlessly stylish, most of the time it's Alexa Chung. But then I've kind of moved on from her because I'm really looking at the older women now. My absolute favorite is Iris Apfel, because pretty much anyone, if you've seen that documentary, Advanced Style, all those older women who do their own thing. Not that I'm old or anything, but I'm in my mid-40s and I'm kind of really enjoying looking ahead with a positive view. I've actually always at the back of my mind thought, when I'm super old, I'm going to be one of those zany, crazy, eccentric women. That has always been my kind of ambition. So it's like, oh, I'm getting closer to that now. So I can pretty much get a little zany each year, you know?
Well, I think you've still got plenty of time.
Yeah, no, sure. Well, imagine how zany I'll be by my 90s, you know? And there's so many anonymous people taken on the street these days, those street style photographers who I just think are amazing. And, you know, I see them once, never see them again. So I don't know their names, but they're also my style icons.
Oh, I love that. It sounds like you're inspired by like a certain essence of a person because obviously all of those examples are quite different, but there is something underlying. It's like this coolness. And so which fashion icon, dead or alive, are you desperate to have dinner with?
Am I allowed to just reel a whole long list? Because what I want is a like really amazing conversation. That's what I, and I don't want to be a part of it. I just want to listen. Okay, here the ladies. It's all women. It's Deanna Vreeland. It's Edith Wharton. It's Big and Little Edie from Grey Gardens. It's Katharine Hepburn, Lauren McCall, Coco Chanel, Frida Kahlo, Diane Keaton. Duh.
Oh.
But I don't want Marilyn there because I think she'd just totally shrivel up in the presence of all those really dominating females. So I just wouldn't want to do that to her. And anyway, I don't want to ever meet her because I feel like it would just make me so sad to have to say goodbye.
I know. Well, imagine this. They can have the dinner party and then you, me and Marilyn can have a martini on the sideline.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Perfect. I'm like, I want to be there. And if you could live in any other era or place, where slash when would that be?
Okay, well, I'm choosing two for this. It's basically going to be either somewhere like Downton Abbey in the 20s, it needs to be well into the 20s when the fashion got much more interesting. And I want to be able to go to London a lot and do some kind of flappering. Or it would be in New York in the 70s and just be frequent Studio 54 with all those really, really cool, the Jaggers and Grace Jones. Yeah.
And do you have a favourite place to shop for vintage nowadays?
I totally do. And actually, that's why I'm collaborating with them. The Corner Shop is a fairly new shop. The sellers, it's Addison Marshall and Gavin D. They have been on the scene in Sydney Vintage for many years with the Crown Street Project, which mostly sold at Surrey Hills Markets, which is where I used to live near. And so I'd go every single month. And they were always my favourite sellers. And now they've got their own shop and it's gorgeous. And they've got a bunch of artisanal kind of ceramics and jewellery all locally made. And so they've got this amazing kind of juxtaposition of vintage, beautiful vintage clothes, really highly curated, and they rotate things a lot. It's not a matter of rummaging so much as a matter of kind of carefully flicking through, because it's good stuff, perfect for people quite new to vintage shopping. You know, it's done in a very beautiful boutique-y way.
How nice.
I love that shop. Yeah.
And I'd love to hear more about your collaboration with them, but before we talk about that quickly, I just want to say, why do you love vintage and why do you think more people should wear more vintage?
It's probably the most, I guess, democratic fashion there is, because you can find it at all price points depending on where you're shopping. It's a treasure to be hunted, so it's the journey, not just the destination, is why I love it. I love it because you can use it to create something completely unique. And it doesn't have to be zany unique. You can be really subtle in your style and still wear vintage. I love it for its detail and for its quality. Anybody can find that, you know, if you go somewhere out of town, like kind of out whoop way, and you look at in a there might be a funny little vintage store, or there might be a charity shop, and if you're willing to look, you could find something extraordinary.
The last place I went like that was about a year ago, actually, but I went to Bendigo, which is in country Victoria. It's a like old gold rush town. And the Mary Quant exhibition was on at the art gallery there. There's a great gallery there. And I went to a dry cleaner, which had this weird pop-up vintage store in it. And I was like, oh my God. And the stuff was extraordinary.
Probably stuff that had never been picked up.
Yeah, I know. I know. Good point. And the lady who owned it, she's very country and sort of, oh, you're from the city type thing. And I was like, yes. And I just went mad. It was like the best vintage I've seen in so long. I could talk about that sort of stuff for ages as well, but I need to wrap up. So please tell us where we can find you, what your current projects are, how people can stay in touch with you and follow your work, etc.
Sure. Well, I mentioned the Corner Shop before, and we're currently putting together some workshops, which I'm wanting them to be ongoing, kind of 2-hour workshop, group workshops, where we dig into a different element of slow fashion. And mostly that will involve styling. So that whole thing of how to style vintage and secondhand, you know, they might have some more contemporary pieces in there as well. And I think more and more vintage shops are doing that because it's such a good combination. And this is why I'm doing these workshops. It's like, how do you integrate vintage into a modern wardrobe without looking themey, without looking like you're going to a fancy dress if that's not your vibe, and how to shop for vintage. Like, what are you looking for? How to know what suits you, and then how to put it all together. I mean, some of it will also be working with people's clothes they already own, which will be not necessarily vintage. It might be fast fashion. But the point is, what I always say is, like, the most sustainable fashion you could possibly ever have is the stuff that's already in your wardrobe.
Oh, fabulous. And where can people follow you?
Well, I do Instagram quite a lot, at Joanne Gambale. And I guess your notes will have the spelling of that.
Yes, everything will be in the show notes.
Because people always spell it wrong. Also, you can just search up Slogue, spelt like slow and Vogue. And then also, if you go onto my slogue.com.au website, there's a little pop-up and it asks you for your email. Now, I just never get around to sending emails. So literally the only emails that ever come are for the very important, like, workshop dates are in kind of emails, you know, and here's where you book. So I highly recommend anyone who's even remotely interested in anything I've said today, just get your name on there and you'll hear from me when there's something really important coming up.
Awesome. That's so good. Well, thank you so much, Joanne. I'll link everything in the show notes, and it was a pleasure to talk to you today.
You too. It was really fun.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Joanne Gambale. I'm sure you will take away so much about styling, self-expression, and also the importance of sustainability. This week's tip is about something we were discussing throughout the episode, which is sort of traveling to buy really good vintage. Now, I don't mean to say you need to leave where you live to find good pieces, but I think people like Joanne think outside the box when they are searching and hunting for vintage pieces. I mean, the story about her wedding dress is really extraordinary. And it just shows that if you are willing to travel that extra mile and willing to ask the vendor, if you can see that piece, that little piece of lace that's poking out of there, you might find something that's really meant to be. But you might be thinking, well, that's all well and good if you know where to go, but where do you actually go? So what I would recommend is begin by Googling. I mean, it's such a stupid suggestion when you think about it, and it's because it's so obvious, but it's really important to Google your city, find the places that have regular vintage markets, find out where the estate sales are, find out where people are buying vintage. These are the places that vintage dealers often go to buy their vintage clothing. And actually, this tip ties into the fact that I am soon to release an ebook all about sourcing premium vintage clothing for yourself. And it will have many more tips like this to find vintage clothing in your city that you might not otherwise look for or you might not otherwise know about. So have a Google, sign up to some newsletters, read some articles, just do a little bit of research. And once you've done that initial research, you'll be on people's mailing lists, you'll be following the right Instagram accounts, and before you know it, you will know where to go and you will find your equivalent of Joanne's wedding dress. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. We will see you next week. This podcast was co-produced and hosted by Charlotte Dallison. That's me. It was co-produced and edited by Shay McKenzie of Jaunty Productions.